Welcome back for another episode of the Wealth Steading Podcast. I'm your host, John Pugliano. I'm also the founder and money manager in investablewealth.com. And in this episode, we're continuing our 10-part series. Today, we're going to be discussing the fifth wealth building principle, which is embrace technology and innovation. So let's jump right into the subject for today. The reason this fifth principle is so important that I have to encourage you to embrace technology innovation is that so many people don't. So many people get caught up in the status quo of just maintaining things as they are. It's part of human nature. Men especially love to be stuck in a rut. We get in our comfort zone and it's hard to get out. Well, there's a famous example of being stuck in the old ways of doing things, and that's from the Luddites in the 19th century. These were English textile workers. This is at a time in history when textiles and clothing were really part of a cottage industry. Fabrics were made by individual artisans, and mechanization and machinery were starting to come into the industry. This is at a time when the Industrial Revolution was getting started. Well, you can imagine what happened. The workers naturally were fearful. They were afraid they were going to lose their jobs. They were afraid that their profit margins would be lowered. They were afraid that they wouldn't have enough capital to purchase this new machinery. Like all things, when someone's economic interests are at hand, you can pretty much predict where their opinion's going to be. Well, these workers were definitely against industrialization, and they formed interest groups. They tried to get political power. When that didn't work, they formed mobs and rioted and destroyed machinery. You see that happen time and time throughout history. It's the same today. We don't always get mob violence that destroys factories, and nor is it always the working class that is opposed to innovation and technology. In fact, more than not, I would argue that it's the entrenched establishment that are the ones that are really opposed to innovation, and they're the ones that whip up and build the emotions of the working class to take advantage of them. Before we get into that, though, let's just step back and think about this. Like we do in all things in investing and all things with wealth steading, we're trying to take the emotions out, focus on the here and now, focus on the black and white facts, be realistic about it, and determine how we can shape our individual interactions to make the right choices in our business, in our employment, and in our investing so that we can grow our assets so ultimately we can be free, we can have more liberty. So we saw the point of view of the Luddites. They were worried they were going to lose their jobs, they were going to lose their livelihood, they were going to lose their source of production. Well, how did that all work out? Imagine today if you had to buy all your clothing from a home-based business that used a spinning wheel to make threads and yarns and small little manual looms to weave the fabric. Well, you definitely wouldn't have the selection, the quality, the fine fabrics that we have today, and surely not at the price they're offered at. So while there was obviously going to be disruption in the artisans that made this clothing, the advent of the machines were good for the overall consumer, and I would argue overall, it also is good for the individual worker, because innovation creates automation, automation reduces hazardous working conditions, it eliminates dull and routine jobs. The end result is always productivity increases. No business owner would invest their capital to buy the machinery unless there was clearly a profit to be made from the increase in productivity. So in this case, although we're talking about it benefiting the owner, it still ultimately helps the worker, because the worker can then be employed with that excess capital to do things that are best suited for a human. And a human wasn't made to do dull, boring, repetitive, unsafe tasks. The human mind, the human creativity, when you can unlock that, that's when you can make ultimate profits. And that's when the individual worker can feel their ultimate sense of self-worth and self-enlightenment. Listen, we can make the argument a million different ways. We can see what happened throughout history. We can see what the communists did in China with Mao, or things that Stalin did. Listen, if you want to have a zero unemployment rate, all you need to do is outlaw farm equipment. Make everybody go out in the fields and harvest wheat with a scythe. That'll create plenty of jobs. Is that a job you want? Certainly not a job I want to do. Again, let's bring this back to on a personal level. My paternal grandfather, he was an immigrant from Italy. I've talked about him and will continue to talk about him many times in these podcasts. When he first came to this country, he was 16 years old. He had a third grade education. He couldn't get employed at anything other than just being a common laborer. Now, later in his life, he eventually did get hired on with the railroad, and he had a better job, but ultimately, he was always a laborer. He made money working from the sweat of his brow and the strength of his back. But as a young man, he told me his main source of income came from basically digging ditches, moving rocks, and he was thankful for that work. But you know what? Today, I have no desire to make my living by digging ditches. Just this week, I needed some landscaping work done on my property. I have these large boulders that I was getting put up on top of my wall in the back of my yard. Without a mechanized machine, it would easily have taken I don't know, 10 or 15 men to move these large boulders and put them in place. This would have been backbreaking work. But you know what? I only had to hire one guy to do it. He came with a mini excavator. This machine was small enough to easily fit on the narrow border of my yard between my house and my neighbor's fence. It had tracks on it, so it was a very stable piece of machinery. It didn't tear up the sod too much on the grass it's already in. And in about an hour, this one man operating this small little machine was able to move a dozen large boulders from my front yard at the street to the backyard on my property line and to cap off my stone wall. This is a machine that, I don't know, knew it probably cost something like $80,000, but you know, how much would it cost to employ 10 or 15 men? This is a machine, though, that can be rented. In fact, the man that I hired to do the job, he didn't own the machine. He rented it. I think he said it cost him like $1,000 a week to rent it. He can easily get that to pay back in one day. So this one man becomes an entrepreneur because with a small amount of capital, he can create a business. He can create a service that's needed and wanted in our community. And he can do this without worrying about herniating his disc or crushing his fingers or smashing his foot while he moves around these large, huge boulders. So this man that's an entrepreneur, he's also, you know, an owner-operator. He had to have skill to know how to operate that machinery, and he did a fantastic job with it. Boy, he individually picked those large rocks up and moved them like they were marshmallows. It was unbelievable. It didn't take him very much capital. It's phenomenal. Now, sure, there wasn't jobs for these 10 or 15 men that it would have taken 100 years ago or even 50 years ago. But for this one man, it's making him a very nice living and a safe living. That's the kind of innovation and technology that I support. Now look at my other grandfather, my maternal grandfather. He was a coal miner all of his life. He lived in a coal mining town. Now, younger people listening to this podcast, you may not even know what a company town is, but at one time throughout this country, there were actually whole towns that were owned by an individual company, like a coal mine or a mill, and their employees got to live in these little shanty houses. Well, my grandfather lived in one of those all of his life. He made good money as a coal miner. He rose up from just being an average laborer to being a boss on the job. He was proud of his coal mining roots and traditions. It made him a good living. He supported his family. It also deteriorated his health. He had black lung. I'm sure it reduced his life by probably as much as 30 years. And the last probably 10 or 15 years of his life were lived with very deteriorating health. But that's what he did, and he loved his job. And I'm glad he had it. He was able to raise his 4 children working there. But you know what? I'm also thankful that I don't have to live in a company town. I'm also thankful that I don't have to go into a coal mine every day. No thanks. I don't want that. I'm happy with the innovation. I'm glad that I can make my money on a computer through the internet, that I can make money off of my assets, that I don't have to make it off of backbreaking labor. I'll take that innovation any day of the week. So why is fear of technology and innovation so prevalent? Well, as I mentioned before, it's part of human nature. We all have fear of the unknown. We get in our comfort zones, and you see this in children, but you see it even more pronounced in older people, senior citizens. They do something a certain way. They just keep doing it that way. They don't want to change. Some of it's laziness. I think more than anything, it's just human nature. You got to remember that the continuous learning requires work. To keep applying new technologies and different things in your life, it requires a lot of work and effort. Hey, right now, on my television, I have no idea how to operate the remote control. Now, I could have done that 20 years ago, but with my current TV, I can barely turn it on, select channels. I surely can't program a recording or anything like that. Now, the bottom line and the reason that I can't do any of that is because I don't watch TV, and so I have no desire to learn how to do it. If watching TV was part of my regular lifestyle, I would have definitely made the effort to learn how to program the TV or learn how to use the remote control. But since I don't really watch television, I don't care. Now, my kids, on the other hand, they obviously know the ins and outs of that remote control. But our fear of change and innovation isn't all human nature. I would argue that there are more nefarious reasons. I think that the powers that be prey on the natural human instincts of wanting to stay in their comfort zone. And so they provide all kinds of disinformation. They provide all kinds of reinforcing things in the media and in our culture to get you to buy into keeping the things the way that they are, to keeping things in the status quo. Your natural tendency to be resistant to change is propagandized by the establishment. Now, why would the establishment do that? What kind of conspiracy am I talking about? Hey, listen, this isn't a tinfoil hat observation. Just look at the entrenched establishment. Look at big corporations. Look at labor unions. And I don't care if you're talking about government postal workers or teacher labor unions or the American Medical Association. All these people want to preserve and protect their existing power. Just like the textile workers in 19th century England, change and innovation threatens them. It threatens their position. It may cost them money, take away their profit incentive, take away their profit advantage. require them to reinvest capital to keep up with the new equipment or new technology. They may have to go out and learn new skills. The establishment doesn't want to do any of this. We'll talk about the establishment as being the old money. The old money wants to maintain things just the way they are. They like it that way. People like that gravitate to large businesses, large corporations. And then those that can't make it there, that can't make it in a quasi-free market, they tend to gravitate towards government bureaucracies, particularly those that have a preference for power over money. And then these two great establishments propagandize the rest of us to try and keep things the way they are. So you have the moneyed interests, whether they be labor unions or crony capitalists that want to preserve their profit margins. They ensure that bureaucrats and regulators and politicians stay in power to create laws and regulations that hinder competition and hinder innovation so that the establishment can keep their profit margins high. That's not a crazy conspiracy theory. It happens throughout history. And again, it's part of human nature. When you get to the top of the heap, you want to stay there. You want to remain king of the hill. They've got theirs. They're on top. Once they get up there, they pull the ladder up behind them and they shut the door. They don't want any competitors getting in. They like it at the top. And part of them staying at the top is keeping you at the bottom. And more importantly than keeping you at the bottom, it's enabling you, the mass majority, to hold down those crazy, wild-eyed entrepreneurs with a great idea that want to change things. So how does the establishment keep you paranoid? Well, there, as I said, there's these organized interest groups, the big crony capitalists, the socialist labor unions. They have think tanks, academia. They fund studies or write articles. They create news pieces. They influence Hollywood scripts and movie lines. All of this to keep you fearful of change. Now, I'm not going to get too much into this during this episode because when we cover the eighth wealth building principle, we're going to talk a great deal more about being able to see through the propaganda. But just suffice it to say that you are propagandized. And it comes through the political establishment. It comes through academia. It comes through the media. It comes through Hollywood. Again, this isn't a conspiracy theory. Hey, I spent about a decade and a half of my life being educated in state-run schools. Just sit in any classroom that's funded by the government. Now, as I said, this propagandizing is easy because it preys on your natural human instincts and fears. Look at any best-selling book. Look at any website that's generating a lot of hits and traffic. The ones that are preaching gloom and doom always have an audience. The gloom and doomers do well in bad times and in good times. They fan the flames of our human frailties, our human fears. And again, this is nothing new. It happens throughout history. Go back to the 18th century with Malthus. He was a late 18th century clergyman. The clergymen were the influential and thought leaders of the day. His pessimism had a major impact on the future social sciences of economics and demographics. Malthus believed that we were all going to starve, that people were overpopulating the earth. Peasants were having too many children. They couldn't grow food fast enough to keep everybody alive and feed everyone. We were going to overpopulate the earth and would all end up starving, just like bacteria dying in an overcrowded petri dish. Now, doesn't that gloom and doom story from over 300 years ago sound just like modern times? Societies love to preach the Armageddon apocalyptic story, whether they're religious people or atheists. Everybody wants to prophesize about how the world's coming to an end. As a kid, when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s, all I heard about was environmental crisis and environmental devastation. And hey, I'll admit it, the world was a messy place. I grew up in western Pennsylvania, a beautiful area wrecked by coal mines and steel mills. The lakes and rivers were polluted. The air was filthy, and it needed cleaned up. Hey, I definitely don't deny that. The natural environment there is much better now than it was 40 years ago. But if you would have listened to the gloom and doomers, if you would have listened to the environmental extremists, you'd thought the world was all coming to an end. If acid rain didn't kill us, it would be the hole in the ozone. When those catastrophic prophecies didn't pan out, global warming came onto the extreme and became the new cause celeb. Now, this was in the early 90s, and I find it maybe not coincidental that it also coincided with the fall of the Soviet Union. You have to remember that Russia's number one export is oil and gas, so their entire economy is really based on petroleum exports. It was in the global powers' best interest to keep us fearful about running out of energy and keeping energy costs high because of environmental concerns and because of CO2 concerns. That helped keep the price of oil high. That kept the very fragile post-Soviet economy of Russia afloat. Still keeps them afloat today. It probably only costs about $25 a barrel to pump oil out of Saudi Arabia. And yet we're paying $103 a barrel as I record this podcast. That delta in pricing keeps the Soviet Union afloat, keeps them liquid, and it keeps all the banks and the other capitalist institutions that either profit from Russia or have loaned Russia billions of dollars. It keeps them all afloat as well, keeps them all liquid. So you can see this might be one way where preachers of the gloom and doom aren't doing it because they believe in apocalypse. They're doing it because it lines their pockets. Hey, think back just a few years ago. As late as 2008, people were hysterical over peak oil. Now, I have been hearing the same old peak oil hysteria since the mid-1970s during the Arab oil crisis. But the fact is, we haven't run out of oil. We're not going to run out of petroleum products anytime soon. This year, the United States will become the number one world producer of oil. That hasn't happened since, I don't know, like the 1940s. This country has cut OPEC imports by more than half in the last 5 years. And it's not because we're using less, it's because we're producing more. North America is awash in oil and natural gas. The state of North Dakota alone, now this is not a state like Oklahoma or Texas, or the Gulf Coast, which is known for its oil reserves. This is a fairly innocuous energy state. They're producing over 1 million barrels of oil a day, and that's expected to maybe double in the next year or two. That's about a third of what we're importing from OPEC, just from little old North Dakota. The reason I bring the hysteria over peak oil up is because the oil boom we're experiencing now, it isn't because of the energy policies that were forced on us by the politicians. The oil boom isn't occurring because of the pressure the environmental groups have put on industry. This bonanza in oil isn't coming from anything the White House is doing, or work of the Congress, or the Energy Department, or the EPA, or any regulatory group. It's coming in spite of all those people. In fact, it's not even coming because of the interests of the big global energy companies. People like ExxonMobil, they've had almost nothing to do about the energy boom that's been occurring over the last 5 years. Remember, these multinational energy companies, they're the entrenched bureaucracy. They like keeping things exactly the way they are. They like all the government regulation and all the bureaucracy. They like the restrictions on drilling. Why do you think they keep the government power structure in place? So what brought about this energy boom? Well, it was the wildcatters. It was these small little energy companies, small little gas and petroleum companies owned by either individuals or a small consortium of investors. These were the people that went out and took the risk. These were the people that went to obscure places like North Dakota. These were the people that invested in technology. And it's important to point out here, technology that they've used to bring this boom about, it wasn't necessarily revolutionary. They obviously didn't have to have the R&D or the CapEx budgets of ExxonMobil to make it happen because they didn't have that kind of money. You hear all about fracking, how fracking has revolutionized this energy boom. And it's true, but you know what? Fracking is only half or maybe less than half of the story. The other part of the equation is horizontal drilling. Now, fracking itself has been around since about 1948 or 1949, so there's nothing new there. But the convergence of the fracking technology with horizontal drilling, that's what made the difference. And horizontal drilling has been brought about because of innovations in robotics, big data number crunching and data storage of computer systems and software, all the intricate sensors and control systems that they have now, and the advancements made in material science. We can not only drill down a mile or two into the earth and frack, we can drill down a mile and then drill sideways a mile. It's amazing. It's revolutionary. It's why they're able to pull oil and natural gas out of places where they could never get it before. Big energy companies like Shell and ExxonMobil, they've ignored those deposits because it was too inconvenient for them to go there. They already had contracts and leases on deep water drilling, land leases that were favored by government regulation and government control. It was these small little companies, these small little wildcatters that didn't have access to those energy leases. They were trying to figure out how to apply this technology to the land that they could afford to lease and own to drill for and natural gas and oil. So these small little wildcatters and their companies, they embraced this new technology of horizontal drilling and merged it with an old technology of fracking. It was their guts and their determination that have brought this oil boom about. And this is not unique to energy. This happens again and again throughout time and throughout every industry. Think of the computer and software technology innovators of the last 30 years. Bill Gates, Steve Jobs, people like Michael Dell. These are mostly young college kids innovating, creating software, and building computers in their dorm rooms. Steve Jobs even dropped out. He couldn't even put up with college. These weren't people that worked for the big technology companies of the day like Hewlett Packard or IBM. These were renegade innovators, wildcatters in their own right. And this is why we have to embrace and encourage and promote entrepreneurs like these men. We can't be jealous of them. What do we care if Gates and Jobs became billionaires? Think of how your life has been improved. I'll tell you, my life has been sure improved by these men. There's no way that I could have the lifestyle or the earning capacity that I do if it wasn't for Steve Jobs and Bill Gates. They're entitled to all the billions they made. Technological innovation, it breeds competition. Competition brings us new methods, new products, new services. That then creates a higher quality, a higher standard of living for us at a lower cost. It makes life better for everyone, the rich and the poor. Everyone wins. Forget the propaganda you hear today about income inequality. It's the same argument every election cycle, pitting the rich against the poor. The argument's always about the disparity between the rich and the poor, but when government or big business or unions get in and they have their way, it's the middle class that suffers. Come on, look at our standard of living. Our poor people have extremely high standards of living, and that's if you compare them to affluent people in developing parts of the world. Our poor people have central heating, they have air conditioning, they have all the food they want. Let's face the facts. Our poor people are fat. The biggest problem affecting our poor people is heart disease and diabetes. So don't be a Luddite. If you want to accept the philosophy of wealth-steading, where you can increase your freedom and your liberty by building your assets and creating a life where you can live off of your own investment income, then you need to embrace innovation and technology. Start in your business and professional life. Don't be afraid to learn new technologies. Keep yourself fresh. Keep yourself relevant in the economy. Whether you're the boss or the manager, or whether you're an employee, you need to find new ways to integrate technology so that you can remain relevant, so that you can increase your productivity, and that'll allow you to stay competitive. If you don't, you'll lose your job or your company will lose its market share. Just look at a simple example from my own life. This podcast acts like my own radio show. It gives me access to thousands of people that I could have otherwise never met. It allows me to promote my business and my philosophies on investing in a way that I could have never done just a few years ago. And I can do it for virtually free. No big radio station or broadcasting network telling me I can't have my own show. There are no gatekeepers. The only limitations holding me back in creating a fabulous podcast with millions of listeners are my own inabilities. Embrace innovation and technology in your own personal life. Use things like Facebook and Twitter and Skype to stay in touch with family and loved ones and old friends. You know, over the last 40 years, I've moved around a lot. I've lived in different countries, traveled throughout the world, all these many places. I always made new friends, but I lost contact with old friends. We didn't have the technology and the media that we have today. It's so much easier to stay in touch. Think about how you can build your own personal relationships, your own personal capital that way. Think about the freedom that technology provides to us, especially as we get older, for the people that are disabled. The automation that's available today to help senior citizens and people that are hearing or visually impaired. These are phenomenal changes in people's lives. It creates freedom and liberty. It could have never happened 30 years ago. Just as a sidebar example, I was talking to my friend the other day. He had just gotten back from a trip to Israel. He'd been out of the country for several weeks. He's a dog owner, like everyone with pets. He was concerned about leaving his dog at a kennel. But because of technology, while he was in his hotel room in Israel, he was able to go to the internet to log on to his kennel's website to look at the webcam and see that his dog was happy and healthy and playing with the other animals. He was also able, because of the phone in his hotel room, which used voice over internet protocol, he was able to call back to the United States, talk to the owners of the kennel, and see how his dog was doing. Now, he could do this free of charge. It didn't cost him a penny to access the internet, to look at the webcam, to see his dog on the screen, nor did it cost him any money to make the phone call. It was all done over the internet, free of charge for him, covered by the cost of his hotel room. Not only would it have been impossible as little as 20 years ago for him to use a technology to be able to see the dog through the webcam, but to make a phone call from Israel to the United States would have been cost prohibitive for most people. We live in an amazing world. Technology and innovation drastically improves our quality of life. And you need to embrace this as an investor as well. Regardless about how you may feel about a topic, put your feelings aside. You need to invest with your head, not with your heart. Overcome your natural tendency to fear new things. Overcome your natural tendency to be afraid of things that you don't know about or things you don't understand. You need to invest in technology. You need to invest in companies that are invested in technology. You need to invest in companies that are investing in innovation. As best as you can, try and understand and learn these new technologies. You know, when we talk about high tech, it's not just about computers and software. When we talk about technology, break down that word. Think about what it means. Technology. It's the study of technique. Technology isn't about computers or software. Many people, when they hear that word, that's all they think about today. Technology is just about improving things, innovating things. How do you hit a golf ball farther? You go out and improve your technique. You improve your swing. You improve your timing. That's technology. How do you get better at playing a musical instrument? You improve your technique. You practice. You develop muscle memory. Whether it's music or art or industry, everything gets better through technology by improving our technique. So as an investor, it's your responsibility to understand what new techniques are out there, what's being innovated, how can you make money and profit from those companies that are participating in them. Now, the biggest reason why it's important for all of us to embrace technology and innovation is because if you don't, you're going to lose. You're fighting a losing battle. Innovation always wins. It's the condition of mankind to innovate, to improve his surroundings, to improve the quality of his life. If mankind ever fails to do that, we'll fail as a species. It doesn't matter what kind of propaganda war the corporate crony capitalists, government bureaucrats, or the labor unions, it doesn't matter what any of them try and impose on us, the status quo will not remain the same. The entrenched powers will eventually lose. They always do. The Roman Empire fell. The British Empire collapsed. The Soviet Union fell apart. Every society, every company, every government, every individual that doesn't embrace innovation eventually fails. It doesn't matter how big they are. It doesn't matter how powerful they are. People living in the Roman Empire never thought it would fall apart. People living in Britain in their heyday before World War I would have never thought the sun could set on the British Empire. Well, it did. Just look at history. Look at individual industries. See how they change. We've talked a lot about energy. Think about the energy industry. Mankind started satisfying their need for energy by burning wood. Then eventually that evolved to burning coal. It was only about 100 years ago that all the houses in America were lit by kerosene lamps. That's unthinkable today. Electricity, electric lighting, Thomas Edison, that's what replaced kerosene. Now our energy demands today are all mostly petrochemical, petroleum-based oil and natural gas. It won't last forever. It'll change. It may be 50, 100, 1,000 years. I don't know what it'll be, but it'll change. We've talked about Bill Gates and Steve Jobs, Michael Dell. Think about how computers have changed in your lifetime. 60 years ago, computers were dominated by mainframes. These were companies like International Business Machine, IBM. They're insignificant today. The mainframe was pushed aside by the personal computer. Then we had laptops, tablets. Now people carry around smartphones with more computing power than the space shuttle used. I mentioned IBM. They're fairly insignificant today. Microsoft is finding it very hard to compete. If these companies don't innovate, they'll be gone. I think back to my childhood. United States Steel. It was unthinkable that they would go out of business. Pan Am. They were the international airlines. They were bankrupt by the early 90s. Stalwart retailers like Woolworth. People never thought these corporate giants would fail. But if you don't innovate, you die. Now I know there are some disbelievers among you, and I'm not saying it's all utopia. I know it's not. There are always problems and bumps along the way. Innovation isn't a straight line up. It ebbs and flows. We can see problems in history. Let's look back to the 19th century. Infant mortality rates skyrocketed. In some places, they were as high as 75% because the doctors of that day, the supposed innovators, the supposed people that had the wisdom and the technology, they weren't washing their hands. As this new field of medicine was going around birthing children, they were promoting disease. They caused these unhygienic conditions of doctors, caused these extreme infant mortality rates. It was the knowledge and the wisdom of the midwives that kept things clean, that knew how to be hygienic. It was they that used the wisdom of millennia that birthed children in a safe and effective manner. So then eventually, the new technology of medicine caught up. They went back and became rational. They looked at the ancient wisdom. They adopted more hygienic methods. It was a setback, but eventually innovation played out, and the efficacy of medicine eventually superseded that of the midwives. It didn't happen overnight. It wasn't perfect. It wasn't utopia. But again, eventually, technology and innovation brought us a higher standard of living in terms of healthcare. We see similar problems today with our industrial food syndicate. Because our food industry is based on cheap inputs like corn and soybean, our people are plagued with obesity, diabetes, heart disease, cancer. These aren't conditions we have to live with. Eventually, technology and innovation will improve our food industry. We'll find better ways of farming. We'll go back to some of the ancient wisdom that we've forgotten. We'll re-embrace that, and we'll look at it and apply it in the light of the scientific knowledge that we have today, and things will get better. We won't have to live with these debilitating diseases that are self-inflicted because of the cheap and poor quality food that we now eat. Things will eventually get better. So as we wrap up this episode, I want you to commit to embracing technology. Get out of your comfort zone. Displace your fears. Use your discernment. Use your knowledge and wisdom. Use that to apply technology and innovation in a way that's advantageous to your personal life, to your business, and to your investment income. It's the only way you have to improve your standard of living. Learn to make money off of technology by investing in those industries that are favoring trends in innovation. And I promise you those will be featured topics of upcoming episodes. For now, though, I invite you to join me in our next podcast when we'll discuss the sixth wealth building principle, which is how to profit from trends. As always, I welcome your comments. And if you have any questions that you'd like to hear us answer on future episodes, please contact me through our website at wealthsteading.com. Wishing you the best of returns. This is John Pugliano.